Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. This is Latifa A. Hameen, Making Positive Choices. I am live on AM360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected. And we are live on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and other places. So Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I bear witness that there is no God but one God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And I bear witness that Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is his messenger and his last prophet. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. Which means all praises are due to God, all praises are due to God, all praises due to God. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I am so excited to present my program. I do this program every second Sunday on AM360, again, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected. We are live on AM360 and also AM360.org. If you want to get online, we're on there as well. So I do this program again every second Sunday from 12 noon to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. No, I'm sorry, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock Central Standard Time. So I just want to get that straight. Thank you. All right, today we're going to talk about how to build a relationship based on interdependence. And I know you may say, what is interdependence? But we'll get to that in just a few minutes here. But first, I wanted to say, just talking about relationships in general, most of us value our connections with our partner, especially if we have a romantic relationship. We are wired for connection, and it allows us to create the bonds and the intimacy with our partner. The success of a long-term relationship depends heavily on the quality of our emotional connection with each other. So when we think about an ideal relationship, we often think of a wonderful, close, long-life relationship with the most important person in our lives. How do we build that relationship, that cozy, that safe, that long-term bond with someone we know has our back for the long haul, a relationship that gives us the freedom to be ourselves, that supports our growth and allows us to have flexibility with each other. One of the key elements in understanding is understanding the difference between interdependence and codependence. So what is interdependence? It suggests that partners recognize and value the importance of the emotional bond they share while maintaining a solid sense of their self within the relationship dynamics. An interdependent person recognizes the value of vulnerability. And we're going to talk a little bit about vulnerability as well today. So we're going to hold that thought. So being able to turn to partner in a meaningful way that creates that emotional intimacy. They value a sense of self that allows them and their partners to be themselves without any need to compromise who they are or their value system. And when we say value system, it's the things that you value. And even while you're valuing those things, you should have a partner that has similar values as yourself. So being in an interdependent relationship, it can be very healthy and very meaningful. So being dependent on another person can sound scary when we say dependence versus interdependence. It can even be healthy. So what is dependence? See, when we were growing up, we're often taught, we talk about an overall value of independence, to be somewhat self-contained. So we don't want to be dependent on another person, but then when we're independent, that means that we're taught it's overexerted. And we place a high value on not needing anyone or any emotional support. I got this. I can do this myself. I'm independent. So you go from dependent when you're growing up to independent, and sometimes independence can have such an inflated definition. As valuable as having a sense of independence is, taking it to an extreme can get in the way of being able to connect emotionally with others in a very meaningful way. Emotional intimacy with your mate can be difficult to achieve. It can even be scary or not seen as valuable in a relationship. For those who have an extraordinary sense of independence, I just want to be independent. So you have that, and you can take that to an extreme, which you will miss out on a lot of the emotional connections because you feel like, oh, I don't need anybody. I don't need anybody but myself. I can take care of myself. I can do this myself. And so that takes you to another extreme. You know, anything in an extreme is not good. So interdependence is not codependence. Again, interdependence is not codependence. It's not the same thing as being codependent. A codependent person tends to rely heavily on others for their sense of self and well-being. So if I'm codependent, that means I am dependent on that other person to make me who I am. I don't make a move without that person because I'm depending on that person for my well-being. There's no ability for that person to distinguish whether they end where they end and their partner begin because they're so far up in there with their partner that they don't know that. They're waiting for them to make the next move. They're enmeshed within that person. There is a sense of responsibility to another person to meet their needs or their partner to meet all their needs in a relationship. For them to even feel like they're worthy. They're waiting for that person to tell them you're okay, to validate you, to tell you that you are somebody. That's that codependency. So traits of a codependent relationship include things like poor or no boundaries. You people please, behaviors, unhealthy, ineffective communication, manipulation, difficulty with emotional intimacy, controlling behaviors, blaming each other, low self-esteem on one or both of the partners, no personal interest outside of that relationship. Your relationship is your whole being. You have no you outside of the you with your partner. Codependent relationships, they're unhealthy and do not allow the partner room to be themselves, to grow, and not even have any autonomy. These unhealthy relationships involve one or both partners relying heavily on the other and the relationship for their sense of self, their sense of feeling worthy, and overall emotional well-being. There are often feelings of guilt and shame for one or both partners when the relationship is not going well. So, you know, there's no sense of who I am without this person. I can't think on my own. I'm waiting for them to talk to me, to give my thoughts, tell me what I think, tell me who I am. What is your well-being? So that's codependent. It involves someone who has lost their core sense of self. They've lost their self-identity so that their thinking and behavior evolves or revolves around someone or something external, including maybe they go into a substance abuse, alcoholism, sex, gambling. Those are things external. So they're relying on things to make them feel whole. So let's look at why interdependence is healthy for a relationship. Interdependence involves a balance of self and others within the relationship, recognizing that two people are working together, that partnership, to present and meet each other's physical and emotional needs in an appropriate and meaningful way. They're not demanding of each other, and they do not look for their partners to feel worthy or a sense of worthiness. Interdependence gives partners space to maintain a sense of self, room to move, room to grow, move toward each other in times of need, and the freedom to make these decisions without fear of what will happen in the relationship. So what are some of the characters of an independent relationship? You have healthy boundaries, active listening, time for personal interest, clear communication, taking personal responsibilities for your own behaviors, creating safety for each other to be vulnerable. And that word vulnerable again, we're going to talk about it. Engaging and responding to each other. Healthy self-esteem. Being open and approachable to each other. When partners feel cherished and valued, the relationship becomes a safe haven for them and a place where they can be interdependent. You're dependent, but you're interdependent. There's an intertwine on each other. You depend on each other, but you're not dependent. They understand that they are not alone in a relationship. You understand that that person is there for you. And you can turn to that person anytime. And you can feel safe with each other when you're feeling like you need in times of need. And feel secure that your partner will be present for you. So how do we build these interdependent relationships? The key to building an independent relationship is to be mindful of who you are from the beginning. Okay? From the beginning of the relationship, you're mindful. This is who I am. This is what I want. This is how I feel. Many times, people are looking for or entering into relationships to avoid being alone. I just want to be with somebody. I'll just take anybody. I just want to be with somebody. I don't want to be by myself. Wrong. Because when you always say close your eyes, when you close your eyes and jump into a relationship, then you're heading for disaster. You don't have any personal reflections of who you are, what you value, and what is your goal in your relationship? What do you hope to have with this individual? So you have to take time for these kind of personal reflections. What allows you to enter a new relationship and an awareness of self that is critical for the establishment of a relationship based on interdependence, not dependency. Excuse me for a minute, I'm trying to get back on, okay? So there's important things to maintain a sense of self in your intimate relationship. These are some of the things that it can help you maintain a sense of self. Knowing what you like and what matters to you. What do you value in a relationship? Not being afraid to ask for what you want. Spend time with your family and your friends. Pursue your personal goals. Be mindful of what you value. And what brought you to that? Make time for things that interest you and your hobbies. Don't be afraid to say no. It's okay to say no. It's okay. It's not like, oh, I can't say no. It's okay. Don't keep yourself small or hidden to please others. I just want to, I don't want to do this because I don't want to make any noise or I don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. Don't down yourself because you want to please others. Allow your partner room for opportunity to do the same things will be the key to establishing a healthy, independent relationship. Starting your relationship in this way can allow for the development of a safe space for each other and learn how to turn toward each other intimately without fear of losing yourself or being controlled or manipulated. You don't want to be controlled or manipulated. You want to be able to be yourself and have a healthy relationship where you can talk and you can run, you can go towards your mate and in a loving way, in a secure way, when you feel good about your relationship. So relationships based on interdependency do not allow people, they don't leave you feeling guilty or scared of the partner or the relationship, but it leaves you feeling safe with your partner. And that's a good feeling. Take time to reflect on who you are and what you want in your most important relationships. Be mindful of this when you're looking for a mate. It can help you ensure that your relationship will be healthy and more solid for the long term. If you are in a relationship or marriage already, it's never too late to examine your and your partner's value to ensure that you remain aligned. You want to make sure that you have that interdependence and not that dependence or codependence in your relationship. And that's so important in building a strong relationship. Now, I'm in the process, I have a relationship guide, and I'm in the process of doing another relationship guide. So that should be out in a couple of months or so, but I'm excited about that because I just give you different things to look at and to build on your relationship to make it a more successful one, inshallah, God willing. Well, we are on AM 360 as well as Facebook and LinkedIn, and I'm so excited. And we're going to take our station identification break that we need to take on AM 360, and we'll be right back. God willing, we're going to talk about vulnerability. Don't touch the dial. We'll be right back.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to AM 360. Join your host, Munira Habil, every Tuesday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we explore relationship topics addressing what we didn't know, what we've learned, and what we need to know and why. Because on this show, it's all about courtship and marriage.
To make making positive choices. I am your host this afternoon, Latifa A. Hameen. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you all for joining and for this discussion. We just finished talking about interdependence and how interdependence is built on having a healthy relationship versus codependence or dependency. All right, so now, which I said earlier, we're going to talk a little bit about vulnerability. And I know, you know, when we think about vulnerability, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to talk about vulnerability. That's a weakness. Believe it or not, vulnerability is strength. When you have vulnerability, you're strong because you are courageous in making that step to being more emotionally connected. And if you don't have vulnerability in your relationship, you're not getting the full capacity of your relationship. You can't truly love until you are vulnerable. When you're always holding back, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, you'll never know what it is to fully love someone unless you're able to be vulnerable. So what is vulnerability? And, I read things from Dr. Brené Brown, and she talks a lot about vulnerability. So according to her, vulnerability is uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Why are we afraid of vulnerability? We are afraid that someone will find out who we really are deep within ourselves. They will reject us when they find out who we are. So we're afraid of that. We try so hard to appear perfect, always to stay strong, intelligent, in order to connect with others. But that is often a pretense, and it always, most of the time, has an opposite effect. But we try to hold things in and hold how we actually are, it has effect on us. When we hold things in and your stomach starts turning and you start getting knots in your stomach, as I say, then those things will start to harm your body. High blood pressure, migraines. We feel, we don't feel a sense of who we really are. So we're holding stuff in. So, and just think about it. Sometimes when we run across people that we feel that are fake, we're just like, I have something about that person that I'm not feeling. That person doesn't seem authentic to me. So we like all authenticity. We like that. We like people that are themselves, and they can just tell you they're open, they're vulnerable. And it gives us permission to do the same, to be ourselves. And I'm going to put one of my friends on blast here, one of my sister friends. She's so vulnerable, and she's so open. And I just love that about her. She'll tell you, this is who I am. What you see is what you get. And you know who I'm talking about, sister. I'm not going to mention your name. So research shows that the quality that makes a relationship last is its degree of affection, and true affection implies what? Vulnerability. So every day in our lives, we encounter vulnerability. So our innermost that is within us is what we're scared of someone finding out about. And according to Dr. Brené Brown, she says there's four steps to allowing yourself to be vulnerable with your spouse. Number one, she says, visualize yourself in an honest and open communication relationship and work toward allowing yourself to be more open and vulnerable. When we're vulnerable, we bare our souls. We open ourselves up. And, you know, it's that feeling of nakedness. You know, we always want to cover up. So that's removing all the cover, being naked, being who you are, being raw, as we say. Number two, challenge your beliefs and your self-defeating thoughts about accepting nurturing and support from your spouse. Challenge that. Number three, remind yourself daily that it's healthy to accept help from others. And it's a sign of strength, not of weaknesses. Don't let your fear of rejection or your past hurt stop you from achieving love and intimacy that you deserve. You got to practice vulnerability in small steps because you got to have courage to be vulnerable. Create a more trusting relationship with your spouse by giving yourself permission to be vulnerable and take risks, one where you're comfortable. Start out. Share your dreams and be your authentic self. Vulnerability is not weakness. It's the most accurate way to measure courage. You gotta see if you have the courage to be vulnerable. There's benefits to being open and honest. You know? To love is to be vulnerable. You open up yourself. You're taking a chance to give someone your heart and say, I love you. This can hurt so bad, but you take a chance. You're willing to take a chance and to be vulnerable on that love. When we lose our capacity for vulnerability, joy becomes foreboding. It's scary to let ourselves feel it. You gotta open up. Sometimes you gotta do it little by little. No vulnerability, there's no creativity, no tolerance for failure, no innovation. It's that simple. If you're not willing to take a chance or to fail, you cannot be innovative. If you're not willing to build a vulnerable culture, you can't create. And you can't escape being vulnerable, really, you can't. Sometimes you're vulnerable and you don't know it. You got to be open. It's so much easier to cause pain than to feel pain. No one wants to feel pain. That's part of life, feeling that pain. But if you can feel the pain, open yourself up, learn something from it, and move forward, that's strength. Okay? Having the choice to embrace exposure. It's easier in the end. I know you say, I'm just going to hold in. I'm not going to love anybody. I'm not going to get hurt anymore. So I'm never going to love again. And then what happens? You end up being lonely by yourself or just don't want to take any chances on anything because you don't want to be vulnerable because you don't want to get hurt. But vulnerability, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. It's scary. And it feels like, oh, my God, something is going to happen. But what you have vulnerability, you take that chance and you put yourself out there and you open yourself up and you get the love that you've always wanted, and you have joy and happiness. What if? That's a what if. Show up. Be seen. Answer that call to courage. Be courageous. You're worth it. You're worth standing up and being brave. You're worth that. Now, vulnerability, it comes from the Latin word meaning wounding, like you're wounded, okay? Not surprisingly, vulnerability often has a negative association, of course, in Western culture. You know? So, contrary to popular belief, opening yourself up is, again, scary, but it's so rewarding in the end. So when someone tries to avoid having an honest conversation with their mate, vice versa, each one, for fear of being hurt, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to feel hurt. That results in what? You closing yourself off and you lose out. No matter if you're on the receiving end of love or pain, some people just are afraid of taking that step. Keeping yourself closed so you don't get hurt means you can never be close to another person. So if you close yourself up, you're never going to be close because you're going to be living in your own little world by yourself. So healthy relationships that we've learned how to open up and share our hearts, you have to be able to listen to your mate and be open to being affected by their words and their feelings, even when it's difficult or painful. So vulnerability is an open emotionalness. Push yourself in a position which you are exposed and willing to be open. So you're acknowledging your emotional state rather than avoiding it. So when you embrace vulnerability with your mate, it's not a done deal. You got to let your guards down to connect to that rawness we talked about in a very open manner. You got to be willing to let it all out. Put your heart on the line, even if it means heartache. That may sound like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. But vulnerability encourages the most authentic version of yourself to come to the forefront. That's authenticity, and it comes to the forefront. So why is this vulnerability important? It's important because it's an important measure of courage, and it allows people to be seen and understood by people who are important to them in their lives. Being vulnerable serves as an important way to foster your authenticity, belongingness, and your love. When you accept vulnerability, you find that you've experienced important emotional benefits. Number one, you have greater strength. Putting yourself in situations where you feel vulnerable can be a way for you to gain some confidence and believe in your ability to handle challenging situations. You have stronger relationships. Being vulnerable with others is a way to foster intimacy. It can deepen your passion, your empathy, and your connection to others in your life. And you can also have an improved self-acceptance. Being vulnerable allows you to accept and embrace who you are or different aspects of yourself. You have more confidence and you being true to who you are. So why do we fear so much? Why do we fear vulnerability so much? Because it's associated with a lot of other challenging emotional states. It plays a part in the difficult emotions such as disappointment, and Dr. Bree Brown talks a lot about shame, fear, and grief. The fear of vulnerability is also often related to fear of rejection and vulnerability. That's what it does. So what are some of the examples of vulnerability? Taking chances. Although it may lead to rejection, take a chance. Take a chance and put yourself out there. Talking about mistakes that you have made. That's vulnerability. I made a mistake. I made a boo-boo. Sharing personal information that you wouldn't normally keep quiet or keep private. You share. You share with people that deserve your sharing, though. Feeling difficult emotions, such as feeling the shame, shame and grief and fear. And I often talk about shame, and I've learned a lot from Brene Brown, on shame. Shame is something that I had to work through a lot in my life. Shame and being more vulnerable. It also, vulnerability helps you to reconnect with someone you have fallen out with. You know, being your true self, coming to that person and talking to them and, bearing yourself or your soul. Being honest about what you need in a relationship and including your boundaries and your expectations. I know one time I was like wanting this relationship so bad I just closed my eyes to what I was feeling inside. I was afraid to be vulnerable. I was afraid of losing out on what? At the end of the day, what was I losing out on? But I was so afraid to be vulnerable, so afraid to ask what I wanted, ask for what I wanted. And it ended up flopping anyway, but if I had been vulnerable, then I would have gone through that in a swifter manner and not have to slower and painfully, That's the way I feel about it. So how did we become so closed off? You know, children are vulnerable. If you look at children, they will tell you how they feel. They'll tell you what's on their mind. They don't have any shame or anything. We've lost a lot of our vulnerability. So how did we become so closed off? So, like I said, children are free and they're open. They share who they are. As you grow and mature, you have learned that the world can be very painful, very painful place. You learn that not everyone is on your side. Not all situations are going to go your way. Then over time, you also learn to protect yourself, to pull yourself in. I'm not going to allow myself to be open. This might mean that you build walls around your heart. And you've convinced yourself that you never really love the person who hurt you. And you practice the art of denial. So you don't want to deny, you're trying to deny that it didn't happen. And you're trying to close yourself off and be strong and I'm not going to let this come in me, and you hurt me inside. If you allow yourself to feel the hurt and feel the pain, then you can get through it. But if you hold it in and deny that it exists, then what will happen is you will close yourself off. Even worse, you probably begin to believe the negative thoughts and feelings about yourself. So you go within and you say, I'm not worthy of love anyway. I didn't think this person would be the person for me. And all of this stuff, so all these negative thoughts are in your mind. So you internalize that, and that's where the shame starts. As you search for the hurt, you begin to believe that you were responsible for that pain. You were responsible. So you have all of this negativity within yourself, like I'm responsible for all of these things that happened to me. So vulnerability is a state of emotional exposure that comes from a certain degree of uncertainty. It involves your willingness to accept the emotional risk that comes from being open and willing to love and to be loved. It's a very common fear, vulnerability. Once you understand this central emotional challenge, you can learn how to be vulnerable. And then you can say, this is rewarding. And you can learn how rewarding it can be. Sometimes you have to take baby steps with things. Sometimes you just can't jump and run into something. Sometimes you have to take it step by step by step. And if you do that, then you can reach the heights that you want to reach with being vulnerable, because you're never going to have true love until you're able to be vulnerable with your mate. So I hope that I have given you something today that you can take with you. And as I get more information, I always like to share what I have learned, because all of the things that I talk about, I've been through them, going through them, you know, and so I can speak from experience. And I'm so thankful for the experiences because it helps me to be a better person. And again, I have another book coming out. It's called Heart Connection. And it's a relationship guide, and it's a little bit more on different things. So I have the other one, When Hearts Connect, a relationship guide. Then I have now Heart Connection, a relationship guide. So it's kind of some of the similar things, but it's just more information. So as I get the information, I like to share it and give it back. So thank you all so much for joining me this afternoon. It has truly been my pleasure. So I'm here every second Sunday from 1 to 2 Eastern Standard Time, 12 to 1 Central Standard Time, and 10 to 11 Pacific Standard Time. So thank you all so much for joining me. God bless you all, and I pray you have a most pleasant rest of your day and a productive week. God bless. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. With AM360, I am Latifa Hameen. I just finished up my presentation on making positive choices. And the next program that will be coming up is Host Highlights with Fleming Elamine, inshallah. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Assalamu alaikum. This is the Preacher Hadi, host of Al-Islam and Focus Learning Lab, here on AM360, inviting you to join me Saturday evening at our new time, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as we continue to share inspiring and thought-provoking Islamic education. Inshallah, I will see you in the lab at our new time, 5 to 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Saturday evening. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you kindly.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, welcome. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. I am now bringing on Flemming El-Amin, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
And inshallah, we'll be out of this car. Alhamdulillah. I'm traveling, trying to get back to my house. I should be there in about 5 minutes, and we have no more static in the background here. But thank Allah for just having another day here on his planet, you know, and appreciative of that. The little things make all the difference. So, I'm glad for that, you know. Yes. And Brother Allen just called and said he was on the line with Grace Line, but he'll click on as soon as he can off the Grace Line program. Please be joining.
Okay. And what is, Adam, if you're online, please press 1 to get in the queue. I don't know if he's on. He's probably not on yet. Okay. So do you want to stay on now, Fleming, or are you trying to get home? Will you tell me what are your thoughts? Fleming? Oh, did I lose him? Okay. We're going to go station identification.
Peace and blessings. I'm DeLacy Umar Phillips, producer and host of the Dynamic Islamic Faith program, preparing to make it in the land of plenty, right here on AM 360 radio broadcast, the number one Islamic station in the nation, where your intellect is respected, your voice protected. Brought to you each Saturday, 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Preparing to make it in the land of plenty is how we focus on the principles of El-Islam and how they prepare us to be successful in the dynamic, diverse life of the Western culture. Thank you. See you right here, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Saturday. Peace and blessings.
Assalamu alaikum. That is the peace that only Almighty God can give be upon you, and that peace obligates us to keep the peace and promote the peace. I'm your host, Michael Hamid, of Not Just Talk on am360.org. Join us Thursday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We look forward to you being with us, joining our guests from inside the Islamic community as well as outside, those men and women who are community builders. And also, periodically on Thursday evenings, we have open mic where you become our guest. So join us for more of Not Just Talk, conversations related to community building. Again, assalamu alaikum.
Join us for Muslim American Power 5 on Mondays 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Muslim American Power 5, referred to as MAP5, featuring Sister Amatula Sabri, Sister Cheryl Sadu, and Brother Fleming Alamein. That's Monday, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, for MAP, Muslim American Power 5.
Join us every Monday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time for an episode of Optimal Health with your host, Abdul Shaheed, your certified symptometry health coach and doctoral student at the American School of Symptometry. It is our aim and objective every week on am360.org to enlighten health-conscious individuals on root cause therapeutics and provide them with guidance on general wellness and self-nourishment. Planet Earth is well known in symptometry as an echo chamber of illusion and a testing ground with booby traps everywhere. Come join us each week to learn about these booby traps that cause health to be denied. Connect at am360.org and 24-hour streaming at 701-719-4197. Call in to listen to speak to the host at 515-605-9891 or 425-292-4253. Share comments at info@cwsc.us. Tweet us at CWSURA. Email us at info@cwsc.us. Visit our parent corporation, Community Wide Surers Conference, at cwsc.us and leave a listener comment at 910-317-0297. You are listening to AM360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
Okay, are you there, Flinny?
Yes, I'm about 2 minutes from the house. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you.
You can hear me, okay. All right. Yeah, I'm coming up the driveway now, literally. Did Adam come on yet?
No, I don't see any. He hasn't pressed one to get in the queue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can begin our discussion.
Well, I can interview you first.
Okay.
And you can tell us, you know, about you and who you are and all of that. We can do that first before he comes on. He can be second person. Okay?
All right. That sounds good. I tried to send you a little notice and Google me up and just a little background information, but I don't know if you got that in time or not, but you can just talk. You don't need to read that.
Mm-hmm. Can you just tell us, I guess, why you're getting it together and tell us who you are and what you, some of the things that you're doing and the things that you're involved in?
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
I'm turning it over to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, I wasn't reading my clues properly there. All right, well, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. I'm honored to be on the spotlight for our host, Clay M36, this afternoon. This is Brother Fleming Alamein, and I'm one of the three hosts on a program entitled MAP5, which stands for Muslim American 5, designed to engage us more civically, politically, and to accept our citizenship responsibilities. And that program comes on every Monday, 10 a.m., Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, every Monday. And so tune in, be inspired, and be involved, and stay engaged in your community. That's our first promo. Now, beyond that, I've been involved in the community since I was, oh my God, eighth grade, when I first got introduced to Al-Islam by one of my barbers, actually. He challenged me to come down to, at that time, the temple, to hear the life-giving teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And, of course, I accepted the challenge. And the young man came by my house in a big old Cadillac. I'll never forget that. I said, oh, my God, this is very impressive here. Pick up a young brother like this. So that was my first introduction. That was in about the eighth grade, man. That was prior to going to college and all of that. That had to be in the early, oh, boy. I wrote my letter in 72, so that had to be, I'm going to say, late 60s, maybe 67, somewhere in there. Because the Vietnam War was pretty much alive then, too, as well, or shortly after that. But from that experience, I was able to go to college, attended Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa, on an academic scholarship. I spent 4 years up in the cold climate coming from North Carolina, which is just the opposite, very warm and medium weather here. And, of course, from that experience, we went to Chicago to teach at that time, Muhammad University of Al-Islam. My wife had just graduated from Spelman College. So we both decided to go to Chicago, and I was finishing up my last year as a senior doing my urban teaching in the Chicago urban teaching program, actually. And Sister Marva, at that time, who became Sister Salema, asked me if I wanted to teach eighth grade class on economics and history at our school, because they already had a program set aside for my wife to come teach as a first grade teacher, and she had been highly recommended from Atlanta because she came to the community in Atlanta after graduating from Spelman College. And so we both sort of started our career off there in Chicago, 1974, 1976, as newlyweds, and having our first child in Chicago in 1974. And so shortly after that, of course, we all know that 2 years later, the leadership change. We were blessed, I must say, that we were interviewed by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad at his home through Sister Marva's invitation. And so he interviewed us before we were able to teach at the school. And I'll always remember one thing he always said. He would say, brother, why don't you hear a tree fall in the forest? I said, wow, what can I say to this person here, as we call them, Jehovah Apostle, to sound at least halfway educated? I said, I really don't know. He said, well, you don't hear because it's just one of many trees. So here's the symbolism for you. When you decide to do something, just do it. You don't have to announce it, because once you announce it, the enemies will come out and try to block you. So whatever you decide to do, sign, just do it. I said, oh, I'll remember that from now on. So in 2024, I'm still repeating what he told us. In 1974, at 5857 Woodline Avenue in Chicago, Illinois. So when the leadership changed, of course, Imam Washington Muhammad came into leadership, and he invited me to bring my students over to the house to celebrate their graduation from high school. I was a high school teacher, of course, at the school. And some of the kids in that class were Imam Daniel Kareem's sons and Brother Jabbar's children, and you know, some of the immediate family were all in that classroom. A lot of Muhammad's son was in there as well. And at that meeting, he encouraged me to go back to graduate school. And so from Chicago, I said, Imam Muhammad, how long would it take me to learn this Arabic to get a good handle on? He said, brother, about 6 weeks. So he said that you should go back to school and go ahead and complete your academic preparation. And so I left Chicago in 1976 to go to school in Arizona at the American Graduate School of International Management. My intent at that time was to come back to Chicago to work at Salam International, to work with Brother Naida Ali in that enterprise. But, you know, things change. Allah is always in charge. And by the time I finished my program out there, I got an invitation to come to New York City to work at that time, Chase Manhattan Bank on Wall Street. And a lot of that came about because I had previously worked at our bank in Chicago, at Guaranty Bank and Trust Company. I would teach school in the morning and go to the bank and work in the afternoon. I needed extra money because my son was born in Chicago. And some of us know that we did not pay a whole lot of money for teachers during that era. So I had to supplement my income, and I enjoyed work at Guaranty Bank in the evenings and teaching the brothers in the morning. But from that experience, we went to, of course, Arizona. And from Arizona, we got hired to come to New York
to work on Wall Street for a while. And that experience was very enlightening. Every Friday we met with David Rockefeller, who at that time was, of course, the president of Chase. It was a standalone bank then. It was not merged with any other banks in the area. So that gave me a lot of perspectives on how financial markets actually work. I learned a lot from that experience. I also learned that, for me, I was not motivated with just making dollars and cents in that sense. And so I decided I did not want to spend my career in the banking industry and started looking for other options for myself. And eventually, other opportunities opened up for me. I got an opportunity to go to graduate school again to get some other degrees in education leadership and principalship, superintendentship, et cetera. And that led us from New York to Ohio, from Ohio for a while, back into Louisiana, and Louisiana, of course, eventually all the way back to North Carolina. And this is our home, of course, and sort of been here ever since. But every time we moved, another child came around for some reason. I don't know what happened with that, but every time we moved, there was another baby due. But I think a lot about five children, our, you know, 17 grandchildren. And we just think a lot for my wife, Dr. Cassandra LeMay, who's been with me 50 years and counting. So that sort of sums up my background, primarily banking and education. Mm. I did some work in the university level, community college level, and high school level, and worked somewhat as administrator for a while. But that's basically your brother, you know. And in terms of community activity, at one point I was the chair of the board for something called CAT TV. We stood for Cable Access Now, basically, or Cable Access Channel here in the area. So we did about four different programs on that facility. One was El Islam in Focus, and we did a number of different things to try to introduce the community to what was happening in the community. And that was a very good experience for them. And I've served on several boards, you know, since then, and Allah blessed me to serve as a county commissioner. I was elected as the first Muslim to serve in that capacity in Forsyth County, and served in that capacity for 5 years by the grace of Allah. And now I've sort of done some other board activities, but not as involved as I was, you know, earlier. I have a little bit more time, but my wife says I'm more busy now than I was when I was working full the time. But on paper, I'm supposed to be retired. But you know how that works. Never really retired. But I don't have to punch into anyone's clock. I can choose to go when I want to go, by the grace of Allah. So that, in a nutshell, is your brother. I'll be glad to answer any questions related to that experience that you might have, or anyone listening to our program might have about Brother Fleming Elman.
Okay. Well, I don't see anyone. I don't know if make sure if Adam is there. He can press one if you're on, Adam.
Okay.
Wow, very good sense of background there. Okay, he's here, so let me bring him on.
Okay.
Are you ready? And thank you for sharing. I mean, it was very interesting. I'm going
thank
to bring him
much
on.
As-salamu alaykum.
Oh, alaykum as-salam. Thank you.
How you doing, Brother Fleming?
All right. I'm much better now, Brother Adam. Much better now that I got my brother's voice on the other end. How you doing this evening, bro?
I'm doing good, man.
Alhamdulillah. Well, you know, we're spotlighting you this evening on, you know, whole spotlight program. So we're going to allow you to share the mind behind the voice a little bit and just share a little bit about your career. You know, it led you into what you're doing now and other activities you might be involved in that, you know, our listening audience would greatly appreciate and learn from. So we'll start with a little school called Winston-Salem State University. I think you had an experience down there at that school in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. Let me go a little bit before that.
Okay.
Came out of high school. I was living in Atlanta. I went to high school in Atlanta. And I got a scholarship. I took some tests, and they told me I had a high aptitude for engineering. So I applied for Georgia Tech. And then I got a dual degree scholarship, which means I would have went to 2 years of Morehouse and 3 years of Georgia Tech, and I would have 2 degrees.
Okay.
And, you know, so, and before that, I applied to MIT and a few other places, and you know, but I decided to do a degree. The problem is I lived in Atlanta, lived in the projects of Atlanta, so I didn't have that. I felt that support, and then I was young and crazy. That didn't help. So
I'm
from High Point, which is about a half an hour from Winston-Salem. I know you're familiar with that. So I ended up moving to High Point, even though I hadn't lived in High Point since the ninth grade, I guess. Moved back there. And while I was there, I started running with the wrong crowds again.
Mm.
And it was kind of funny because we used to, on Saturday morning, we looked forward for the brothers coming over from the temple in Winston with bean pies. So after about 3 or 4 weeks, you know, Brother Wally and Brother Willie, they didn't show up.
Mm. Mm.
One of the groups said, "Hey, I know we can get bean pies." That's okay. Where? He said, "Come with us on Sunday." So Sunday, we went to the temple to get us a bean pie. And I went in and I had, you know, we had to sit down and listen to a service. A sermon,
yes,
or whatever they called it by then. Minister Irvin.
Yes, sir.
And then that's when he asked, "Does anybody want to accept the teaching of the Honorable Muhammad?" And before I knew it, I accepted it. They told me I had to write a letter to get my ex and whatever. And that's how I became a Muslim. Looking for some bean pies.
That sounds like a book. That sounds like a novel, Deborah. Looking for some bean pies. That never sells. Oh, looking for some bean pies. You know, when you're talking about your Atlanta experience, someone said you had a little pinto car. You take young ladies from Spelman to the airport. That's a little, you know, side hustle every now and then.
That's when I was in Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
That's when I first met Sister Cassandra. I remember her from experience, right?
Yes, sir.
And
for those who don't know, Sister Cassandra is my wife today. it comes all the way around full circle.
It comes around full circle, right?
Yes, sir.
So then, while I'm back in Winston, and I'm joined the temple, and you know, this was in the first resurrection, and you know, Brother Lieutenant Freddie was handling this stuff, and then they gave me a bundle of papers.
Mm.
They told me to go sell them. So I hit this street on that Saturday and went out and sold the papers. So coming the next day for our class, I had turned my money and I sold all the papers.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me another bundle. I hit the street. Sold those papers. Then I noticed on the board, they had names of people that sold papers. My name was never on the board.
Oh, man.
Then I figured out I was selling somebody else's paper. So I told them I want my own paper. You know? Anyway, long story. So I ended up just working, doing what I do, you know, make a commitment, go to work. And then I made first lieutenant. Freddie was the first lieutenant. I made second lieutenant. And I guess that soon after, Mr. Farrakhan came to Winston-Salem State because he attended Winston-Salem State.
Right.
And he spoke there. And so we were on post. The problem was the first lieutenant didn't show up.
Right.
So he got busted. And I became the first lieutenant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was in the end of 74. No, then I was given the title captain at the beginning of 75. And then Imam Muhammad came in position, and soon thereafter he got rid of the determination captain. But I, you know. So anyway, long story short, but while Ms. Falcon was speaking at Winston-Salem State, he made a statement to the brother. He said, look here, this is a fine institution. Some of you brothers need to go to school here. And he was looking back over his shoulder, me being spooky, I said, he's talking to me, right? I ended up going back to school. I ended up enrolling in Winston-Salem State in 75. And in 2.5 years, I completed my degree, and I majored in accounting. And I got a job in New York. I got a job in New York City at Price Waterhouse, and I started in December of 1977. Right.
Yes,
and I stayed out on Long Island. My mother lived at that time. She lived on Long Island. She worked for the Internal Revenue Service, so she lived on at Holtsville, near Holtsville, which was the service center they just built.
Okay.
And I commuted to from Long Island to New York City on Long Island Railroad. And I mean, this was like in the winter of 75. I mean, the winter of 77. Beginning of 78, the winter of, it was 78. And when I left the house, it was dark. And when I got back,
it was
dark. I hadn't seen my mother out in the daylight the whole time, you know. I'm tired of this stuff. So I had a good friend from Winston that lived on Staten Island. And I said, well, let me reach out to them and see if they can help. And I called my good friend. I said, look here, I'm doing a long commute. You know, I'm just up here. And they were gracious enough to allow me to stay with them. And my good friend was Brother Fleming El Amin and his wife, Cassandra.
Full circle again there, huh?
Alhamdulillah. So I went from almost a two-hour commute to about a 40-minute commute or less. What's that now? Staten Island Fairway.
Yes.
So it was a long story. So I worked at Price Waterhouse, and I stayed there. I started as a staff accountant. Price Waterhouse is one of the largest accounting firms in the world. Now they're known as Price Waterhouse Coopers because they merged with Cooper Librarian and became an even larger accounting firm. So that's how I got my start in the accounting field. And I stayed with them until 1974. Then I had another friend that Fleming knows who started a food service business in Fayetteville. He's from High Point. And he used to call me every year. He called me every want me to come work with him. Come down to Fayetteville. I said, I've never been to Fayetteville in my life. I said, I'm up here in New York and you know, living a good life. I'm not coming down south. So one day Price Waterhouse said, Adam, you reached the pinnacle of what you can do with us. We're gonna have to let you go. And about three weeks later, Larry Shaw, who was the Muslim, first Muslim part of the North Carolina House of Representatives, the first Muslim and part of the North Carolina Senate.
Yes.
And he called me, and I said, well, okay, I'll come down and see what you're talking about. And he told me to fly into Raleigh. He said, when you get to Raleigh, go to the, what do they call it? Fish bait, what they had, the private planes and stuff.
Oh, yes.
We go over there and you're going to look for Rick Harris. He's our pilot. So I flew his company plane from Raleigh down to Fayetteville. That got my attention. You know.
Private jet, there, huh? Private jet, yes.
Private jet. And I'll match the money you're making now.
When you're working,
that's stressing my attention. Huh?
Yes, when you were working for Price and Waterhouse, you got a chance to travel around the country, other countries, in fact, did you fill a lot of expatriates, tax forms, and that kind of thing for a while?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. Gotcha.
At the end of tax season, they had a trip to where they had an engagement with Exxon. Exxon was one of our clients. And normally Price Waterhouse would do the employees and officers of Exxon who worked in various countries. They would man that job out of the office where they had offices, right? Where the problem mm-hmm. is, in Libya and Saudi Arabia, there were no Price Waterhouse offices. So they manned that job out of New York.
Mm.
So my first year being there after tax season, a couple of my coworkers, a couple of Caucasians told me they had to get this job to go to Libya and Saudi Arabia. And he said the company offered them to buy their airfare or they can give them a flat fee of $25,000 or $3,000 and book their own airfare. But Pan Am had a special round the world business class for $2,500. So the first year they did it and they told me what about. I said, man, I'm going to that trip next year. So the next year, one of the managers asked me to come in to the tax department again. I was in the audit, by the way. If I were coming and working in the tax department, I said, well, okay, I'll do that only if you'll let me take that trip.
Hmm.
And they said, okay. So we end up spending about 3 or 4 weeks in Libya. 3 or 4 days break. First year I did that 3 times, by the way. 2 years in Libya and 3 times just to, I mean, 2 years in Libya and Saudi Arabia and 1 time just to Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
And so it was interesting. I get a chance. I bought that ticket, by the way, for me. Around the world.
Hmm. $2,500.
I left New York. The first year I went to England, spent a couple of days in England, left England, went through Rome to Libya, worked in Libya, left Libya, went to Greece for a break, left Greece, went to Libya. Left Libya at the end of that assignment. No, I mean to Saudi Arabia. And, of course, I was able to do the Umrah twice in Saudi Arabia. Left that and took a month off, and I would travel the rest of the way. So I went to Kathmandu, to India, to Korea, to Malaysia, to Thailand, Japan, and took my time coming back home.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
we were able to see a lot of things.
So were you able to expand your Islamic perspective by traveling around the world like that with that?
Most definitely. To see people and be amongst people in their own private environment. You know, when I was in New York and we had moved to Midtown, and I would go to Juma at a place near New York because it was close to where I worked at. And I became very good friends with a brother from Thailand named Ibrahim. And Ibrahim invited me to his house, met him and his family. So I told Ibrahim about the trip. He said, well, you got to see my brother. So he gave me a letter to introduce me to his brother who was in Thailand. Another thing, when I was in New York, and one of our clients was Morgan Guaranty Bank, I would go down to the client's place, and it was during Ramadan, so when during lunch break, I would go in the library and read the Quran. So while I'm reading the Quran, somebody standing behind me reciting the Arabic. And it was a brother named Anwar Pasha. He was behind me. And we became good friends.
Mm-hmm.
His father his father used to work for the Bank of Kuwait in Jeddah.
Mm.
So he told me when I go over, I got to go see his mother who was still alive. So after I was working in the western part of Saudi. So the first time I flew down to Jeddah and went to his mother's house and found out that Anwar was there. He was there visiting at the same time. So I stayed with there, and the next day was my birthday. His uncle came and picked us up in a car and drove us to the airport, and we flew to Medina that morning. This is the Prophet's Masjid in Medina.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then we came back that evening about 4 o'clock, and say about 8 o'clock he came to in a car and drove us to Mecca. Right? That was my birthday present. He drove us to Mecca.
Performed the
Umrah. You know, so I had a chance to be around local stuff and meet people. Met beautiful people. When I got to Thailand, I went to Ibrahim's brother's house, and they met me. And then I stayed there like 2 or 3 days. They wouldn't let me spend a dime. You know, I mean, they just hosted me. We went to the Masjid for Juma, so in this car, and we passed this beautiful, large, beautiful Masjid. I'm thinking that's where we're going. I said, Ibrahim, we just passed the Masjid. No. That's a government mosque. We're going to our mosque.
Government mosque. Huh?
Yeah, I guess the Thai government in that part of Thailand, which used to be part of Malaysia during the years,
right.
They had a lot of Muslims
right.
down there. But it was like you cross a little stream, and we're in Malaysia, that type of thing. So I guess that's what he meant by that. So we went out into the small area, and there was a bamboo structure that was their masjid. So I went there. I was the only one who spoke English for the most part. At the end of the Juma, they asked me to say some words, and I stood up to say some words. I wish I could show you all the picture of this. I feel good because I was about the tallest one in that place. You know what I mean?
they're not very tall people.
So the number one question they asked me, brother, you know Muhammad Ali Khan? Who?
Muhammad
Ali. And they were saying it right. Muhammad Ali Khan. Then they started doing like they were boxing. Oh, you mean Muhammad Ali?
Oh.
Are you his brother? I said, no. You know, they wanted to know about Muhammad Ali. You know, he was the number one to them. Well, that was a good experience. I believe me, I can all around. We talked about stories and whatever. But I had a chance to meet people in their own environment. You understand, as they are, and as they're allowed to grow, especially in Islam. So this idea that there's something wrong with culture is not correct.
Right.
There is no Islam without culture. I mean, you've got to have, if people are telling you about their experiences, they're really sharing with you their culture. So when I hear an African American say they don't want culture, they want Islam. And I tell them, whoever brings you Islam, guess what? They bring in their culture with them.
Exactly. Yeah, this trying to just think like them.
Right, exactly. And we've been there before. We've been there before. That's why they want us to say, like we say in the plantation, we're from Master, we sick.
Mm-hmm.
What's this we still?
Thank God, I'm like Muhammad. Yes, he broke those chains for a lot of us during his leadership time.
Man.
You know, think for yourself, be yourself. You know, that was a starting point for us to begin to think independently. But as you were talking about that, my mind went back to, you know, my time in West Africa. I spent 6 weeks over the first time I went. Ghana, Benin, you know, et cetera. Went to the Ivory Coast and came back up through Paris, France for a while before I came back to America. And while I was in Benin, every morning I would hear the Adon call. And I was over with some students from Oregon State University, some working on a PhD, others doing their master's, et cetera. But it's a bunch of students from Oregon State University. So I would get up in the morning after I heard the Adon and try to find out where it was coming from. And they said, "Hey, Flynn, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the city. I'll be all right." "No, you can't go by yourself." But you know how that works with us, man. "I'll be right back. I'm all right. I can speak a little French. I can get my way. I can work around a little bit." But the first place I went to, a little small village, like, they had one little cup they were doing wudu with and passing around that one little cup, right? They put one finger in there doing what we usually do to make wudu. But the people were very warm. They were concerned about me. They asked me in French, did I need any food? Where was I staying at? Very warm. I felt like I was back in South Carolina in my grandmama's house. That's how warm the people were, right? The next morning, I see this masjid up on a hill, all these minarets, you know, all of that. I said, "Let me go check this place out." You walk in the place, carpet was, no carpet, it was marble floors. In the prayer section, you had carpet. It was very well structured. I walked in there, Brother Adam, and the people looking like I was third-class citizen. I said, "Whoa." It was like ice cold compared to the place I just left the previous day. And then with Ahmadiyya movement, you know, people. But totally different, you know, cultural perception, you know. Totally different, you know. Almost wondering, what was I doing invading their premises almost? And, I, you know, like I said, I speak a little French. So I was listening to him talking, you know, about where does he come from? Who is he? What's he doing here? Instead of saying, "Welcome, join us in prayer, make us a lot," you know, that kind of thing. So while I was over there, the only place I could go make prayer was a little small place that I went the first time. But I did get a chance to visit the oldest masjid in Benin that has been there for hundreds of years, and sadly had not been keeping it up like it should be. So I went in, and a lot of senior citizens were sitting in the court area, and the masjid was not kept up like it should. So I asked about who was responsible for keeping it up. And a little brother, who was sort of a guide, he said, "The government pays so much every month for some maintenance, but nobody really keeps it up like it should be." And I felt bad about that because it's an old facility. Just needs some, you know, attention to make it really be like it should be, you know, for guests to come in to make prayer. But the people, very warm. The only exception I experienced was that Ahmadiyya set, who thought they were above, you know, some other people, had that kind of attitude with them, unfortunately. But just having that experience, being there, negotiating in the marketplace, you know, for pineapple, not accepting the first price, and, you know, really negotiating with the people, you can't beat that experience, you know. And every African I met over there spoke at least three languages. This is in Benin. Then we went to Ghana. And, of course, Ghana's more developed, you know, because it acquired, quote, the so-called freedom from Britain first. So a little more developed. But even in Ghana, you know, the we went to visit, I think, Nkrumah's grave site, the memorial for him, and of course we visited all the different, you know, dungeons, as they called them over there, that our people came out of, those enslaved people, and that was quite an experience to go through that experience. But just that it broadens your mind so much when you travel like that, so much, you know. And the people are so warm, you know, and everybody wants to say, you have forehead like us, you must be related to us. That's how they identify me with the foreheads, you know. But you can't be traveling, though. You can't be traveling. Even we went on Umrah, you know, this past year, you know, to be around so many people there, pursuing one spiritual goal, and you see so much diversity, and you really appreciate then your own orientation to the religion instead of someone else's orientation, you know. So you learn to appreciate yourself more too in that capacity. I apologize for getting off track like that, but you just brought those memories back up for me. You're doing a lot of things.
I mean, those are good experiences too. Go ahead.
Yeah, you are doing some things also in the political arena and in the Fayetteville-Cumberland area with the African-American caucus, I understand. And you want to comment on that and some of your other successes you've had, you know, in that area?
Well, yeah, just things have been involved with. Yeah, I became the president of the African-American caucus of the Democratic Party, and it's a and the reason being, in Fayetteville, if you want to be involved politically, you have easy access through this party. I registered as Democrat and Spartan, especially with local things. I mean, people that I would more likely want to support locally are Democrats, especially since the in the last 4 to 8 years where I have a good friend that's a Republican, and I was out to, him and I were having breakfast one morning, and a preacher came by and greeted me, and he said, "I see you eating with the enemy."
Oh, Lord.
You know.
Oh, my God.
I
mean,
the guy was all right with me when I first moved to town. We had the bookstore. He used to come out and buy books from us. And he's a pastor, too, and he had his 10th pastoral observance. He asked me to be the guest preacher.
Okay.
This was in the 90s, though. I mean, so I had no problem with it. And but I had to tell him a few years ago. I said, if I was a Democrat back in 1898, I said if I was alive in 1898 and talking about the Wilmington massacre, I said there's no way I could have been a Democrat. I said now I'm alive now, and there's no way I could be a Republican.
Yeah, go ahead, bro.
I said, this school out here make it hard for you to be a Republican. Because in 2008, he ended up the Republicans for Obama. Now, since that time, he has gone straight crazy. But locally. And it's not just, I can't blame all on Republicans, because when I first moved to town, a Republican hadn't held an office locally in 50 years. So I told my Democratic friend, 50 years, but I said, if you always, I come to a meeting and all you're talking about the white man this and the white man that, I said, I don't want, and this is Monday morning, I don't want my first meeting of the week to be this negative. And if it's the white man, you're not talking about Republicans. Them daggone racist Democrats you've been dealing with.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So I understand where you're coming from. But now, I didn't move out to be a hit or nothing. I didn't want for nothing. I went to a meeting because our current mayor's brother asked me to attend the meeting. We need to form a chapter in Cumberland County. And I was supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got to say that we need to elect the president, so they elected him. They nominated him. But he said since he's working with the state party, he couldn't run. He said, but I'm going to nominate Brother Adam.
He didn't tell me that.
I said, then someone said, yeah, let's get Adam. Adam going to make the white man mad. I said, I don't know about that. I make a lot of Negroes.
mad. Oh, man. Oh boy!
Anyway, that's how I got that position, and we fought back. We got some good victories. I think I talked about in my program, where they tried to change the charter of the city of Fayetteville to move the city council from 9 single member districts to 5 single member districts and 4 at large.
Right.
So they tried to change the structure, and they came out with Vote Yes Fayetteville. So we formed a nonpartisan movement, and we said vote no Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, they raised over $100,000 on their effort, and we scraped and scrounged, and we got $17,000.
Mm-hmm.
With their $100,000, they got 20,000 votes.
Wow!
With our $17,000, we got 26,000 votes.
All right, alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. So sincerity makes all the difference in the world. People make decisions when it comes to voting, not ads. It's people. Your vote is what makes a decision, you know. So that's a good example of how civic engagement makes a world of difference in the quality of life we have in our communities. And we've been working, you know, as the American Coalition for Good Government for some time, and I'm just trying to get more of us involved, like you are involved, Adam, in your community. We have to be on the playing field, not just on the side criticizing. We got to be engaged, you know. One thing I will say about our current governor of North Carolina, Governor Cooper, he's going out now. It's the last term. He was always receptive to ACGG. And he even, I sent him a thank you note when we got elected. And got me in contact with his outreach coordinator, a brother named Kevin Monroe. And I got a letter from someone that was a chaplain, Muslim chaplain, about one of the superintendents trying to prevent them from having halal food during the eat time, you know. So I wrote a little note to the governor. He immediately sent Kevin Monroe an MO to all the superintendents across the state to allow all the Muslims who requested it an Eid meal, you know, during our holidays. And so always respectful in that sense to get things done, you know, but you have to maintain relationships with people. That's key, you know, if anything else that you do. So we have to see the need and then respond accordingly, because we have to improve the quality of life in this country. We owe that to ourselves and to our children, grandchildren, community. You know, that's part of our duty and obligation as believers, period, you know, to be involved like that. Well, Brother Adam, how did you get involved with AM 360? What was that journey like? If you don't mind sharing that with us, huh?
Yes, sir. Well, first I started listening to it. You know, I started tuning in. I forgot how I got word of it.
Yes, sir.
Then I had a chance to meet Brother Thomas Abdul-Salam. I didn't really physically meet him, but I was interacting with him, and Brother Mukhtar. Also, we get on a conference call, and they wanted to organize the CWSC effort. It was really trying to establish CWSC.
Okay.
And so, based on our interacting just by telephone, they asked me could I start a nonprofit corporation, which we did here in North Carolina. We started a nonprofit corporation, and then we started planning to have a workshop, right? And so I said, well, you can do it right here at Masjid Omar bin Said. Even though I'm not the resident man there now, but I was able to convince the believers to host that particular workshop. And so that's how we got involved in it and trying to develop it, trying to see the picture of where we want to go. Had a chance during that time to meet Sister Martha, brother, and other people there. Some of them working now I didn't know before then. But that's how I got involved then. Like it's true in everything else I get involved in. Guess who they asked to be the accountant?
Adam,
I mean, I was somebody put me up for Democracy in North Carolina. You heard of that, right?
It's a
nonpartisan state nonprofit, right? And I was invited to be on the board of that. And I liked that because that was one of the few organizations I was part of that they didn't try to get me to be the treasurer, right?
The accountant. Yes, sir.
You know, I was a member. They want me for whatever, not to be, you know. So I went to a meeting, and they had a young treasurer. He was there now. He was going on sabbatical to Europe and whatever. And we need to get someone to take his place. So I dropped my ink pen on the floor and had to bend down under the table to pick it up. And I stayed down there about 5 minutes. I stayed down there about 5 minutes. I said, maybe they
want
to look at me. As soon as I come up.
Oh, they spotted you.
Oh, God. Not again. They got me. But anyway, I did some accounting work and still do input and help out when I can. So that's how we got involved in it. That's how we got here. And I think that Sister Martha and Brother Kareem and others that are handed now are doing a yeoman's job, and I just try to support them with whichever I can.
Yes, sir. And you have a weekly program too, don't you? Money Matters, or what's the name of the program?
Money Sense.
Money Sense.
All
right.
Money Sense.
AM 360. All right. What time?
We've had it for a little while. 8:00 a.m. Every Thursday morning.
Every Thursday morning, 8 a.m. That's Eastern Standard Time, right?
Eastern Standard Time. Yes.
All right. So get you some Money Sense on Thursday mornings, 8 a.m. through Brother Adam Beyond. I give you straight talk on Money Sense, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Yes.
All right, then, Brother Adam. Well, listen, you've taken us through around the world in your experiences. I'm sure the listening audience appreciated that. Hopefully get a chance to play this segment again, just so people know the depth of people we have on AM 360 and the wealth of knowledge you bring to the air when you share that time with them on a weekly basis. Any words of encouragement you'd like to give others who might be thinking about doing a program on AM 360? What would you suggest to them if they have an interest but don't have the nerve just yet to come up to the plate?
And that's, believe me, that's refreshing. They don't have the nerve to come up to the plate, which means they're very humble with that.
Okay.
There's some people out here, I've got my top 10 list. I'm going to suggest to Sister Martha that they need their own show. There's some people, they just need their own show. Anybody have any questions, anything, any comments?
Yeah, let's just see what's on the board there. Sister Latifah, any hands raised on the board? Or Brother Kareem? I think one of them was running the board for us this afternoon.
No. Oh, okay.
Let's see.
Being a good host, I took the time to log in. I do see some hands. You want me to bring them on?
Yes, please, bring them on, by all means.
All right, we got 646-245.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Farida calling about the Republicans and Democrats. Between the two, the thing about Democrats is at least you can breathe, and I want to explain that by telling you. Republicans, we can't pretend that Republicans are pushing us out, you know, to so-called do for ourselves, other than it being because of classism and racism. And the reason why I say that is because if they were serious about us doing for ourselves, then why are they forcing us to pay more in taxes out of our paycheck than they are paying out of ours, especially when they become rich? Anybody who is rich becomes rich from the majority of the masses who patronizes whatever it is that they're becoming rich from. And the majority of the masses are actually the poor and middle class. So with that said, if they were truly desiring of us becoming and I'm hearing a lot of scraping in the background. I don't know where that's coming from. But Okay. So if they were truly desiring of us doing for ourselves, then they wouldn't be forcing us to pay more tax, giving us less money in our pockets in order for us to do, because you have to have money in order to make money. Plus they would assist us in being more accessible to loans that they give the immigrants to.
Well, my sister, anybody that says that Republicans want to help us do for self, they're lying. The actuality is they're really not worried about it. They don't think we can, so they don't worry about it. Same like the Democrats. They don't think we can, because we haven't, and they're not worried about it. The only people I'm trying to get to believe is us. We got to believe that we can make a difference. But unfortunately,
absolutely,
especially with this social media or whatever, that them days, it's gone. It's, they're not really worrying about it. We can talk a good game, but, you know, when I was growing up, we had a saying, and it said, put up or shut up. And it's time for us to put up.
Right.
Right. So can you explain how you feel that Democrats are causing us to not do for self?
Let me just on my work with the local Democratic Party, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't, when I say they don't believe that we can, they're not really worried about it. They just want us to buy, go along with what they want to do. And they don't care what we want to do. Even I do. There was a law passed in North Carolina which lowered the age, Freeman knows about it, lowered the age for crime to be a felony, lowered the age from 18 to 16. Which means, what I mean by, there's going to be a lot of young brothers that are going to get felonies at 16 that's going to ruin any opportunity for them in life, barring from great help. Right? So here we have we have the state representative in my district, Caucasian, and used to be African-American at that. He votes for this bill. He votes for this bill. So when it came out that he voted, he calls them uproar. So now he calls some African-Americans he know. He wanted to meet with them to explain why he voted for the bill. Right? That's his way of doing damage control. So I called some people and said, no, I want to take the man to lunch. And I'm going to have a one-on-one talk with him. To let him know these Negroes you're going to reach out to don't speak for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving you this false sense of security that you can go to them and appease them and they can hold off the masses from being upset with you. You might as well save whatever money you're spending for them. A couple of dollars might give them. You might as well save that time or whatever. If you represent us, the time to get our point of view is not after the deal is done. You should have come to us up front.
Exactly.
And how do you feel that
let me give you another example. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me clearly? Okay, yes. Let me give you another example too, sister. I'm so glad you called in. I used to serve as the chairman of the South County Democratic Party during the time when Obama was running for president. I served two terms. And most recently I've served as the president for the American Coalition for Good Government, established by Imam Waqif Muhammad in 1997. That organization is a nonpartisan group, which means we don't endorse parties. We follow issues, meaning what? Any candidate who will support the issues that we're concerned about, we can support that. But it's across party lines. It's not in a bag for one party or the other party. And I'll be very specific. When I was chairman of the party here, I called it just as I saw it because I was raised that way. So I called some of these people Dixiecrats. Because in the city of Winston-Salem, the tallest building at one point downtown was the Robert E. Lee Hotel. So they knew that I was excited about us having President Obama as president, and I used to wear my hat, et cetera. They were very offended by that because they thought I should be neutral. But I said, no, I can't be neutral on this one. And so a lot of them critiqued me, and I just sort of fed them back and said, well, listen, some of you have a mindset of a Dixiecrat. You're still under the umbrella of a Strom Thurmond and others who have that kind of mindset, and you won't give freedom of thought to people who think differently. No more than what Adam was saying earlier, that there are a mindset among some Democrats that you do as we expect you to do. Republicans, on the other hand, my father and my grandfather were Lincoln Republicans. They have some green lights I give them credit for, but overall, as philosophy, they are far from our interests at all. The issues they support, another issue germane to us when it comes to what's happening in your neighborhood, in your community, in your street, in your grandchildren's life. And just think, you know, beyond your own self-limit and just see what are they saying in their platform that's going to benefit our children? What are they doing in their platform that's going to benefit us, period? And that concept of doing for self is something that's very elusive. They use it among some people that they put up to say they are including us in their philosophy. What they're really doing is window dressing. They're really doing window dressing to try to make you think or to lull you to thinking that indeed their issues represent our issues. That's not the case at all. And I worked among many of those people you know, as a Wall Street banker years ago in another lifestyle, their concern is money, bottom line, maximizing their money, bottom line. I'll say it again, maximizing their profit and their money. And if you're not in that vein with them, then you're not considered part of the club. And we can talk more, inshallah, on another program. I would invite you to listen to MAP 5, Muslim American Power 5, on Mondays, 10 o'clock Pacific time, 1 o'clock Eastern time, and we talk in more detail about political issues like you're bringing up this afternoon. But I want to thank you. Who are you calling from, if you don't mind me asking?
California.
California,
Originally from New York, though. I'm a New Yorker.
Okay. Nothing wrong with the Big Apple. I put my time in New York, too, and so is Brother Adam. We both put our time in New York. But we really appreciate you calling in. And the questions are very germane, and I really invite you to call in again when we have more time to just get into more detailed discussion about that whole concept, because some of these Democrats, they are still in a Dixiecrat mindset for some of them. You know, they take our votes for granted, and that cannot be the case. You have to earn our votes and earn our respect, and not just take it for granted. And I'll stop with that. But when looking at this new election, keep in mind this one item I suggest you look at. Google up Project 25 and take a moment to just read over the document. If nothing more than an executive summary, that'll give you an idea of what the real thinking among some of the conservative Republicans. Again, it's Project 2025. Okay?
Right. Okay, I will, but then that is the Republicans' domain, right? That this Project 2025? Because
yes, ma'am.
It has been said that Donald Trump was setting that up.
His a lot of the people that worked for him in the first administration wrote a lot of the policies for this new document called Project 2025. When you find out who some of the authors are, a lot of those documents, they're previous workers in the Trump administration in his first term. So it's mm-hmm. even though they say it was written by the very conservative group, the Heritage Foundation, but if you read the authors, you'll find out that many of those guys worked for the Trump administration on his first term. So it's their blueprint based on what they would like to do, including getting rid of the Department of Education, period. There's a lot that we could talk about on that, but take the time to just look over it and be informed of what they would like to do if they get back in power versus what they say they're going to do in their public comments. I hope that
right. So then all this ends up being that it's worse to vote for Republican right now.
No question, but I can't say that legally.
Right.
But as a private citizen, absolutely.
Can I say it? Oh no. Okay.
But, no. Go ahead, Brother Adam. Go ahead. Say
no,
what you want to say.
I'm not going to say it. Go.
All right.
You know, when somebody say something right, there's no comment. It's they're not going to add to it. So I can't
okay.
improve upon that.
All right.
Alhamdulillah.
Assalamualaikum.
How much time we got, Fleming?
We're almost down to the last minute, I think. It's almost 3 o'clock. Let me
okay.
go check and see what time it is. Yes, oh, it's 3 o'clock. Oh, man. Oh, yes.
You got
okay. Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and wrap it up the way you'd like to, since you're
no,
our
no,
host.
No, I'm saying got one more. I've been holding on patiently.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
On.
Let's bring him on. Let's bring him on, yes.
727-408.
Assalamualaikum. Alhamdulillah. But I like to say that we have delegation going over there overseas, Iraq and Malaysia, different places like that, and they come over there like men. They don't come over there like a little boy to be handled and dealt with in any kind of way. And over there in the Senegal and different places in Africa, yeah, the spirituality is good, the unity is good though. But the France still got the money, and it seems like wherever the whites are, the darker people, we don't have the money. But over here in America, those in our association, we're going to have the money. It's not going to be no all spirituality. I got to listen to the credit union this morning, and also Muslim Journal, and now I'm sitting on this, and I'm glad that I hear what I hear. Though, let me tell you something. You have young people now, they meeting together, and they form the group called Muslim Culture Con. They have a little thing they're coming up, and they're trying to get the people. I imagine some of the weaker, younger people that's out there, and they're trying to, you know, get them come on in and get behind the legacy of Imam Walter D. Muhammad. And they're trying to get to have the older people in the community, the gray hairs, to kind of like mentor them. So praise be to Allah for that. And let me tell you something. Okay. Everything is all right. It's going to get better all the time. Let's keep focused on what we got to do. Praise be to Allah. And above all, make sure Donald Trump don't get into office. Praise be to Allah.
Alhamdulillah. I got a last call. Thank you so much for your call. Thank you.
Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikumsalam. That might be a wrap for us, Brother Adam. I want to thank Brother Adam Biafra for being our key host for today. I was host for the spotlight on him, and I hope you learned a lot from listening to our brother, a wealth of knowledge he brings to the air every Thursday, 8 a.m. on Monday Sun. So please join in, and we thank you again for listening. May Allah bless you and your family immeasurably. And again, we thank you for listening. And we greet you in a greeting of peace for you and your family. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.